So my name's JC, and I'm an alcoholic.
Thank you, JC.
So it's an honor to be here. I appreciate the group asking me to come here tonight, and I'm actually glad that it's an intimate group. I'll try to make it an intimate, entertaining story. It's been a while since I've told my story. A little bit nervous, first time at this group. My sobriety date is June 22nd, 2006, and I'll also say that I am a real alcoholic. I also am a member of another fellowship. My home group is the Spearheads CA group and the Log Cabin CA group. And before I begin, I'll tell a little story. So I think it was in 2002, I went to treatment for the second time, and I was about 90 days in, and the director of the treatment program came to me and asked me if I would, tell my story, or an abbreviated story. It was really going to be a more of a testimony. It wasn't at an AA meeting. It was going to be at St. John's United Methodist Church here in Atlanta. And it was going to be a large crowd, and I was terrified. I had worked a few steps. I'd started to have a spiritual experience, and I had no idea what I was going to say. And so I talked to my sponsor, and I was, had spent some time before talking to him thinking about what I was going to say. And he said, "I want to tell you something very important." And he said, "Don't prepare for your talk." And I was like, "You've got to be crazy. I'm going to speak to," I told somebody before the meeting, I think it was like 800 people. It was a huge church. It was 700-800 people. The church was full on a Sunday morning. And for some unknown reason, I listened to him. And he told me this about a week before I spoke. And, I sat there and I was blank. I had no idea what I was going to say. But I did pray, and I asked God, just to speak through me that morning. And I got up there, and I can't remember a single thing that I said. But I do know that I remember that a lot of people came up to me after I spoke and told me that they appreciated my story, and it seemed like I had connected with a few people. And so that's what I did in preparing for this. My purpose is to, as the big book says, tell you what I was like, what happened, and what it's like now. But I really have no idea what's going to come out. And I pray to God that it's a story of hope and something that you can identify with, because that's what I needed when I came into these rooms and sat in these chairs. Is what helped me the first time I went to any type of 12-step meeting, and it wasn't a great meeting. In fact, I would say today, it was not a solution meeting. But what it did give me was I was able to identify with the people there who were struggling with the same thing that I struggle with. And that made me, for a brief moment, feel okay that I wasn't, defective or a loser, that there was, there were other people who were experiencing the same struggle that I have. I'm going to spend a little time qualifying myself and just give you a little bit of background. I'm 45 years old. My family is from Memphis, Tennessee, and I lived there through early elementary years. I am adopted, and so I don't know my biological parents or my biological past or whether there's alcoholism in my background. And I'm fortunate that, my parents who adopted me are two of the most loving people that I've ever encountered in my life. And they truly have taught me unconditional love. And I didn't appreciate it at all growing up, but I appreciate it today. But I tell you that just so you have a sense of my background and maybe can identify. Despite that, I felt that there was a hole in my life that I can only describe as a deep insecurity and an uneasiness that that I've known from my earliest memories. And I always felt like I didn't measure up. I wasn't good enough. There was this impending doom, even if everything around me was going well, that something was going to happen. And I tried to address that initially before I found alcohol through self-will. And I was a perfectionist. One of my earliest memories is I would wake up and I would decide what needed to happen for it to be a perfect day. And usually about 30 minutes into the day, something would happen that didn't go according to my plan, and I would get angry, and then I would throw away that day and go do whatever I needed to do to sort of block that out. And when I think about that, when I hear myself say that, I mean, that's pretty messed up. That's like a 5-year-old or 6-year-old memory. My first experience with any mind-altering substance was probably around the 5th grade, and it was with tobacco. It was some friends had were talking about using chewing tobacco, snuff. It was Kodiak. I remember that, and I remember the room spinning and feeling sick, like I was going to throw up, and I almost did. And then I remember saying, "That was awesome, and I'm going to do that again." And I don't know if that's a normal reaction. That was my reaction, but that was my experience with just about everything I put in my body to change the way I feel. And the first time I drank was a few years later. I was in the 6th grade. We had convinced someone to buy us some vodka, and it was I was with a couple of friends, and we decided we were going to measure out shot glasses or shots. And I remember I drank 5. My other two friends drank 3, and one of them blacked out and really made a fool out of himself that night. The other one got sick and threw up everywhere, and I had the best time I'd ever had in my entire life, and I wanted to do it again. And that was the story of alcohol for me. It made me feel, it got rid of that uneasiness, that fear that I described earlier. And so I did. And it progressed through middle school and high school to where by the time I'm in my high school years, I'm drinking every weekend and a lot of times to blackout. But I'm not going to lie to you, I had a great time. On the outside, I did well in school. I was involved in athletics. I did a lot of things that kids do. And if you looked at me from the outside, you wouldn't know that I was a terrified little boy, afraid to talk to people. And what alcohol did for me was it allowed me to go to into social situations and talk to you. And they weren't, and I think what I longed for more than anything was a real connection. I didn't feel connected to anybody. I had these two parents who loved me more than anything. And I had, friends and people around me that, I think, were trying to be my friends, but I was disconnected. I didn't know how to connect, but when I drank, somehow I felt like I was able to connect with you. And I fell in love with alcohol, and I fell in love with, anything else that I could get my hands on that would change the way I felt. And we're at an AA meeting. I believe in singleness of purpose, but other substances were part of my story. But it always started with and ended with alcohol. I went to school at the University of Alabama in Tuscaloosa, and my drinking and my using progressed to where I started to have consequences. I had been a good student, there were periods where my recurring nightmare years after college is that it's 4 or 5 weeks or however long into the semester, and I haven't been to one or two of my classes at all. I have no idea what the assignments are, and I've missed drop ad, and the reason that I have that nightmare is because that's the way I lived, and I did okay, but at some point, a couple years into school, I got to where I was unable to continue, and I needed to come home and go into treatment. So I came home and I went into a treatment center just down the road over at, I think some people from this meeting are there today, and I checked into Ridgeview for a little bit, and I was relieved. At first I was terrified of what have I done to my life, but once I got there, and that was really my first experience with other alcoholics, and I realized that there were other people that were like me, I was like, again, maybe there's something, not something that can be fixed. And being removed from the consequences that had sent me there allowed me to say, okay, I do have a problem, and I need to address this problem. And everything was fine if I was in a group or I was in a one-on-one session with a psychiatrist. But as soon as I got to a meeting and people started talking about steps, anything past the first step, I shut down. Because in step two, I saw the word God. And I didn't believe in God. And that's just where I was. I had been brought up in various Christian faiths, going to church. My parents exposed me to the concept of a higher power, but I had decided that there was no higher power, and I had decided again that there was something broken in me that I had experienced from my earliest memories, and the only way to fix that was if I was going to fix it. And so how could I trust some higher power that had created me and in this broken state to solve this problem? And I just stopped right there. I got a sponsor. I was given a big book, but I didn't work any steps because I was unwilling. I had prejudice against the concept of a higher power. So I got out of treatment. I was actually there for a while. I did halfway and three quarters, and I think I was there for 4 or 5 months. And I got out, and everybody agreed that I should not go back to Tuscaloosa or T-Town, as we called it. That was my playground. And everybody, talked about, changing playgrounds and playmates. So I got this bright idea that I would go to Athens, Georgia. And, I actually went back to school with a high school buddy of mine who had his own issues and was in a similar situation in terms of we both needed to finish school. And I had 3 quarters that I needed to graduate, and I figured I can go there and keep my head down and do this. And it worked for a minute, and then I decided that that I could drink, that I'm not an alcoholic. And March of that year, and I think that was 1994, I had gone on spring break with my girlfriend's family, and she was a girlfriend from my past at Alabama, and the beginning of the week, I don't know why she waited until then, but we flew out. We were going to Colorado, and we flew out, and when we got to Denver, she broke up with me. So I had the rest of the week to spend with her family, who I'd become close to. And I got back from that trip, and I was just so angry. And so I did what I always did when I wanted to change the way I felt, and I went out and drank into blackout. And I drove home, and I do remember getting pulled over, and I got a DUI. And but you know, that wasn't enough to, you know, remind me that I'm an alcoholic. And so I just went on. And interestingly, when I went to DUI school to clean up my DUI, I made a friend when I was there, and this past year will be, we just celebrated our 20th wedding anniversary. So, it's always been a joke that, where do you meet the best people in a DUI school? So that's part of my story. I don't talk about her program, but she's got 13 years. Fast forward, and my disease just continued to progress. And I don't want to spend too much time, qualifying myself, but I got to the point in 2002 where I had a job, had a couple of kids, we were living in Alpharetta, and again, on the outside, things appear to be going okay, maybe even well, but still, no matter what we achieved or accomplished or accumulated, I was empty inside. And the last 9 months that of that long run were very, very dark, and I was basically consuming alcohol and other mind-altering substances on a daily basis from the time that I woke up. My routine was my wife would get up before me. She would take our oldest child to school, and then she would go to work. And I would get up after her, and I would start drinking and using. And I was somehow able to go to work and do that for some period of time. But it was, during those 9 months, I did things that I never thought I would do. And it got to the point where my wife, consumed some with me, but it got to the point where she was ready to stop before I was. And so I knew that I was about to lose my family. So we started going to meetings, and the first meeting we went to, we went in, and there was about 15 people there, and it was a great meeting. I still go to it today, and there was a guy there who still goes today, and he was the one guy I knew when I went in, because I'd had enough exposure to the program that my wife was going to get upset if I didn't get a sponsor. And so I was looking around the room, who am I going to pick, and I've got my eye on this guy in the back who, looks depressed and somebody that I could relate to. And there was this other guy who was full of energy, and the solution in the program was like, no matter what, I'm not going to get that guy. And he's the guy, of course, that came up to me after the meeting with my wife standing there and asked me if I had a sponsor. So I ended up, asking him to be, or agreeing to let him be my sponsor. And You know, about 30 white chips later, I found myself in treatment again. And this time, I truly believe that a higher power that I didn't believe in separated me from alcohol. And I say that because I was not looking to get sober. I was just looking to avoid the consequences and not lose my family and keep things together long enough for me to get, you know, high again and figure stuff out. And circumstances, you know, happened that I ended up in treatment, and I was given the gift of, you know, a break, you know, when I was at a bottom. And, you know, the spiritual bottom that I reached wasn't jail or, you know, even losing my family. That didn't happen yet. I did, through all this, lose a job, a house, and you know, basically everything materially that we had. But that wasn't the bottom. The bottom was, for the last, you know, really 9 months, but certainly the last few months, I would be up in the middle of the night, you know, with a bottle in my hand, you know, with other substances, and it had stopped working for me. It was like my best friend had turned on me. You know, when I didn't have anything to change the way I felt, you know, I was terrified, and all I could think about was how I was going to get it. And I reached the point where I had it, and I couldn't not do it, but it didn't do what it had done for me. And that was the despair that made me finally realize that I can't keep doing this, but I couldn't stop. Fortunately, I had a very good sponsor, and someone that, and I want to talk about, you know, what a good sponsor is for me, because, you know, what he was simply someone who had reached a bottom and had a spiritual experience through working the 12 steps. And that's what he wanted for me. And so it wasn't, you know, we didn't have conversations. I mean, he wouldn't let me call him and, you know, whine or talk about all these things that were going wrong. I mean, he was compassionate, but he was very quick to get me into the steps, you know, that are in the big book about Alcoholics Anonymous. And it was easy for me to see that I, you know, was powerless over alcohol. It was easy for me to see that my life was unmanageable because it was falling apart around me. But then we got to that second step and came to believe that a power greater than ourselves can restore us to sanity. And I struggled with the power greater than me. What he did, a couple of things. One, he had me go talk to somebody that had helped him from a spiritual perspective, who really helped me. But he also encouraged me to go to a big book study. So I started going to a big book study every Wednesday night. And going through the chapter, We Agnostics, really helped me come to a place where I was at least willing to believe. And really, for me, that's where it started. I got to a place where, for me, it was, okay, I'm just willing to believe that there's something more than just me. And so I'm going to continue on with the steps. And I'm going to pray, even though I don't believe that I'm praying to anything. And then I got into my fourth step, and I started seeing how my perception was so skewed. I mean, the transition that I made during that period of working the steps was almost a 180. I mean, I was an A1 selfish jerk that judged everybody that I came into contact with. I think really because I had this huge hole and I felt so less than everybody. But it skewed my perception on the entire world. And when I started going through a fourth step and then did my fifth step, what I saw was all of the false beliefs and the fears that I had and the situations where I thought justified in being angry at you and the people around me, where in reality I had created the majority of these situations. And I was also able to see that everybody else who didn't always go along with everything that I wanted to do and would frustrate me were human, just like I am, doing the best they can with what they've been given and deserve the same forgiveness that I deserve. And so I was able to learn how to forgive myself and forgive others and let go of some of these resentments. And maybe more impactful even than that was, in going through this process, I opened the door to an awareness of a higher power. And I can remember at one point I was sitting on a bench outside of the treatment center, and I think I had one of my first spiritual experiences. And I can't really describe it other than to say it was an overwhelming peace that I don't know if I've ever had ever experienced prior to that moment. And for that moment, I knew that at least right then, everything was already okay, and everything was going to be okay. As long as I, surrendered and didn't keep, screwing it up. So I continued on and identified lots of character defects in 6 and 7. And I got to the amends process, and it was easy to see who I needed to make amends to. And I started making amends, and I was terrified. But my sponsor told me that he had done it, and that it had been an amazing experience for him, and to just, do it and see what happens. And my experience with my amends was incredibly freeing, because none of the things that I feared in that process happened. And many times I was surprised by the generosity and love and forgiveness that I experienced in going through that. And so I had a spiritual experience working the steps, and that was not my goal when I went into treatment on September 13th, 2002. It happened in spite of what I wanted, because I got a good sponsor and he took me through the steps. I started working a step 10 on a daily basis, throughout the day, and I started incorporating step 11 and prayer into my life. And I was given what I always wanted, but I never knew I wanted, and that was just a sense of peace, a sense of contentment. And then I got to step 12, and I did start working with others, and I was afraid of it. I was afraid that I was going to do it wrong. I was afraid that, again, I still had a fear of people. But what I found was there was nothing to fear. And that I believe that I benefited as much or more than anybody that I worked with. And I truly had a spiritual experience sufficient to remove the obsession to use, which was a miracle for me, because back in early 2002 until September, again, when I say that I I drank and used every day. I mean, every day. There may have been a day or two here and there where I just slept. But, I mean, I could not stop. And it had stopped working for me. And I woke up somewhere in that process, and I think it was somewhere around 8 and 9, and the obsession was gone. It, you know, I no longer had a desire to drink, and that was amazing. And I had this, since I experienced that worked, and I saw it working in other people's lives, I truly believed that that this program works, and that, you know, these steps work, and that it can solve, you know, all my problems, and I was ready to take on the world. And so I had, when I was in treatment, I had left my career and I had gotten a job at a coffee shop, and it was my recovery job, and I loved it. I actually felt fulfilled. I think I grew as much professionally with the humility and the hard work of serving people in that role as any other point in my career. Then I had this devastating experience. Long story short, I did not follow procedure one day, and my drawer came up short. And I made a mistake. There was no theft involved, but I didn't follow procedure, and so I ended up getting fired from this coffee shop. And boy, my ego was devastated because again, when I started that job, I didn't in the end, but when I started, you know, the arrogant ego, selfish part of me was like, you know, this is beneath me. It was really, I mean, just being honest. The reality was, I was working a program. I was trying to do my best, and I chose not to follow procedure. That was an arrogant thing. That was my part, and I paid the consequence for it. It actually worked out well because my wife was really sick of us living in our parents' house, and so it pushed me back into my career. And so I went back and got another job, and things started going well, and I got busy at work, and, you know, we moved out of my parents' house and got our own place, and things were going well, and actually it was a great job. I was very happy, and I found myself, I was coming up on 3 years sober, and I was going to pick up a chip in a couple of weeks, and I went on a business trip. We went to Annapolis, Maryland. And if you've seen the movie The Wedding Crashers, there's a sailboat in that movie. And as sort of a group event, there were about 60 of us on this trip. We ended up going out on this boat as a, you know, sort of a bonding experience. And we invited the local brewmeister of the local craft brewery to come and let everybody taste his wares. You know, I had no plans to drink. Again, I was about to pick up three years. I was sponsoring, I think, 3 or 4 people at the time. You know, I looked down, and I had a beer in my hand, and I had been drinking it. And I was like, you know, what just happened? So at that point, I said, you know, screw it. And I continued, and I ended up blacked out, and, you know, put myself in some very dangerous situations that put my entire rebuilt life in jeopardy. Unfortunately, nothing happened. But now I had a big secret, I was not willing. My ego was not willing to get honest about what I had done. So I went back to my home group, and I picked up my third-year chip. I met with my wife there celebrating. For the next 9 months were absolutely miserable. And what I learned and what I proved to myself with that experience is if I am not rigorously honest in all areas of my life, but especially when it comes to my alcoholism, that I cannot connect to the higher power that I connected to when I worked the steps. And I was completely disconnected for 9 months. And again, you know, my higher power did for me what I couldn't do for myself, and it ultimately ended up with one night I just didn't come home. And so, you know, then, you know, I think God helped me tell my wife and everybody that I was in recovery with what I had been doing. What I learned, and the reason I share that as part of my experience, is although I worked the steps and had a spiritual experience and I was sponsoring people, I had not gone back through the steps. I wasn't really doing the work myself. I was going through the motions. And I allowed myself to put things ahead of my recovery. Instead of making a meeting, you know, regularly, or a couple meetings regularly every week where I'm accountable, you know, I prioritized work and family and other things ahead of my recovery, and I lost that spiritual connection, that experience that and connection to my higher power, which I think protects me from the first drink. And that's why I believed I relapsed. And I believe that relapse started, you know, long before I ever found that drink in my hand. Because again, I didn't consciously choose to drink. You know, it just happened. Fortunately, I came back in and I worked the steps and I had another spiritual experience, and that was in 2006, and you know, fortunately, I have not had a drink since then. What I really want to share with you tonight is about a year ago. So I was about 9 years sober at the time, and you know, things again seemed to be going well on the outside, but I decided that there was some uneasiness within me. And a friend of mine that I had met a few years earlier moved back into my neighborhood, and I asked him to take me through the steps because I wanted what I saw that he had. And that was just a really strong grounding in this program and a sense of peace and joy that I recognized because I had had it earlier in my recovery, but I just didn't feel it anymore. And so we've been going back through the steps, and the thing that was really powerful is I had a new first step experience. You know, the first step, it's easy for me to recognize that I'm powerless over alcohol. I mean, that's easy. When I drink, I have no idea how much I'm going to consume. You can go back to that, you know, one night on that boat. You know, I was just going to have, you know, one or two drinks, and at 3 a.m, I'm in the middle of, you know, part of Annapolis that I don't need to be in. In a very dangerous situation. I have no idea. So powerlessness is easy. It's the unmanageability. My first step experience, when I thought about unmanageability, I was thinking about the financial situation and the broken relationships and the lost house and the lost job and all of those things. I mean, that's easy to see that's unmanageable. What I saw this time, when I've been absent, you know, or you know, from alcohol, you know, hasn't been a part of my life, is my disease of alcoholism. I believe is part of me, alive and well, whether I'm, you know, consuming alcohol or not. And if I don't treat it with the steps, and I don't maintain and grow, really, if I don't grow my spiritual experience, then unmanageability starts happening in my life. And it's really with the areas that I'm unwilling to to let go of. You know, and step three says, made a decision to turn my will and my life over to a power greater than myself. You know, turn my thinking and my actions, everything I do, over to a higher power. If I could do that perfectly, then that's all I would have to do. But what I've realized is that even through years in the program, there are areas like certain relationships, work, certain outcomes, financial decisions, that I am unwilling to turn over to my higher power. I'm basically agnostic. I don't trust God with these areas of my life. And then when I don't turn that over, when I don't trust, then I'm in control. I'm the director in those situations. And I do what it talks about in the book. I try to manipulate the situation, and I step on the toes of my fellow man, and I make the situation worse. And I heard someone say something that's really stuck with me. You know, the things that I don't turn over, you know, some outcome at work or some relationship, I'm unwilling to do what I know is the right thing because I'm afraid I won't get what I want in that situation. When I don't do the right thing, I actually contribute and drive towards the outcome that I'm trying to avoid in the first place. That's my experience. I mean, I can see it in every situation. Going back through the steps, which I'm now going to make a part of my annual process, you know, in recovery, has been incredible for me. I've recognized situations, false beliefs, really delusions that I have that have kept me stuck in doing the same thing over and over again, even in the program, but block me from getting everything that there is to get out of this program. And also helped me see some fears that I have that I've been unwilling to let go. You know, this program has given me so much. I mean, it's given me a life. You know, if I had continued doing what I was doing, then more than likely I wouldn't be here today. I mean, I'd either be locked up or I'd be dead. I mean, that's where I was. Today, you know, I have been given some gifts and some opportunities in terms of relationships being repaired, some responsibilities professionally and with some organizations that I didn't, you know, dream of having. Reality is, none of that really matters to me. I need to hear myself say that, because when I am the happiest and the most at peace, it's when I'm in rooms like this, when I'm connecting with other people that have the same illness that I have. And, you know, I can look into their eyes and know that they understand and know, you know, where I've been. And even better than that, if I get to walk through the steps with somebody and see the light go on and see their life change and experience the joy and the love and the peace that comes, you know, from that, that's the greatest gift that I've been given in this program. And that sustains me today. You know, I am grateful that I am an alcoholic. I was so lost for most of the years of my life. I haven't yet been sober longer than I wasn't. And the reason was, I was agnostic to God. My relationship with God is is the most important thing in my life today. And that's pretty amazing when you consider that earlier I told you that, you know, I wasn't even willing to get past step two because I didn't believe in God. I didn't come here looking for that relationship, but my experience is the 12 steps gave me a relationship that solves all my problems. And that's my story. Thanks for letting me share.